You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are now listening to the Ride or Crash podcast.
Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Courtney Coles, and I'll be your moderator this morning for the conversation about race and or racism within the punk and alternative music scene. Joining me today is Jason, Jordan, Sky, Hanif, and Aaron. I'll let them all introduce themselves just so you guys can like get familiar with them, and then from there, we'll jump into the party. Who wants to start?
I'll go first. I'm Sky. Hi, everybody. I play in a band called Issues, and I am usually the only black guy in the room on any given moment, as many of us tend to be, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm Jordan. I play bass in a band called Heart Like War, and like Sky, always pretty much the only black guy in the room, whole life.
I'm Hanif. I'm a writer and a music critic. I've written about didn't love the bands of many people here. I'm excited for this.
So this is Aaron. I am a number of things I can rattle off the list, but I do photography, I run events, I DJ, I'm a multifaceted artist, I would assume. And I used to be the only black guy in the room, like Sky and Jordan. I've noticed more that I've had company in those rooms, and I'm here to speak in peace. I'm here to talk about some stuff. Listen.
Oh, Ricky, I think Jason's muted.
Censorship.
Wow. See, I thought this was what we were here to talk about. They said, we know what his ass about to say. Mute him. Mute his ass. I guess that's a good way to introduce me. My name is Jason Alon Butler. I play in a project called Fever 333. And the whole idea for me in that project from the very beginning was to give voice and notice and representation to a much larger contingent than we've actually given credit for rock music, punk music, alternative music, and that's black culture. It's bi, trans, gay, queer. It's brown, it's Asian, it's everything that we sort of said we were accepting that we still kept as fringe members of this society. We tried to open up our space to allow for people to speak their mind and speak their truth and never to really co-opt and speak on their behalf, but rather we just wanted to open up a space for them to have the conversation about what they knew and their truth. So that's who I am, and that's what I guess that's what we do. And I know some people on this call actually, and it's really really beautiful to see these faces that don't look as phenotypically standard on this call. So just thank you to everybody here and everybody that helped coordinate this today. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, thank you for coordinating this evening tonight.
Hard saying. Before I jump into the topic at hand, I just want to bring it down to human level and just ask everyone how they're doing. How's your head? How's your heart? Are you hydrated? Have you laughed? Have you cried? What do you listen to? Like, what's keeping you grounded throughout all of this mayhem?
I have to take a break from my phone. A lot of things.
Yeah. Fuck. That's the thing, huh? Were y'all getting a bunch of texts and calls from your friends? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, usually white friends that are like, hey, are you good? Like, is this that? Yeah, like, cause I was getting a gang of them and I was so overwhelmed, not by the text message themselves or the calls themselves. I was so overwhelmed with the matter at hand that I couldn't even reply. Like, and then I started to feel fucked up. And then I was like, the emotional labor was like getting bit on me. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it was like in itself, it was like this microcosmic petri dish of what we're all experiencing at all times. You know what I'm saying? Like, this like burdensome feeling of like having to explain what you feel and why in this scene or on a macro level, like in this world. So that's I'm good. I feel better now. I got my matcha. You know what I'm saying? I'm on some like, you know, some other shit right now. But that's how I felt. I don't know if y'all felt the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm good, and I appreciate you asking. I think that I'm, you know, as someone who I feel like my writing work and my creative work is secondary to or separate from my work as a writer. And so, like, you know, it's been hard for me to envision any kind of comfortable space to create while there's like a level of unrest in the streets where I live personally. And so, you know, I've been good. I've been really uplifted by seeing not only so many new folks take to the streets, but also so many folks taking care of those new folks. You know, I mean, I think that for me, we're at a moment of reopening, not in the traditional sense that it's been used to dismiss the coronavirus. But I think we're reopening to an America that was the same as it ever was, but is more eager for shifting. Mm.
I'm not gonna lie out here. Go Jordan.
Oh yeah. I was just gonna say, yeah, I feel good and I feel really like invigorated and just like, and inspired by everything that's going on. And the first couple of the days of like a lot of these protests, I was kind of like, I had to take a step back and just like soak it all in. I processed like all my thoughts. And then as it continued on and my friends texting me, asking me if I'm okay and stuff, and just like seeing all the support, like really just like gave me a lot of positive feelings. And I just feel a lot of positive energy right now and hoping that we can, you know, get some permanent change going on.
Yeah, I mean, most definitely. Like, I'm here in Baltimore, so, and personally, I'm doing better now than I was at the beginning of the year, but this is just a really interesting year. Like, I turned 30, had, like, a mutual ending of a relationship, like, a long relationship. I moved into a different part of the city. We had quarantine. I got laid off. Like, a ton of stuff happened, but to be honest, I've never felt more free. I feel very, like, able to just do what I want to do and kind of able to function and have that sense of agency, which I haven't had in like a decade as a creative, as a person for most of my life, and then as a member of this community for years. But it's been nice to have those people that have come to check in on me. I've been going out and hiking, going out and, you know, riding a bike, like doing things that aren't normally in what I do on a daily or weekly basis. And I feel much more at peace. I feel at peace with the protesting going on. Like, for those that don't know, we did the same thing in 2015 that many states are doing now. We had our uprising, we had our riots, we did all of that. So I get to watch beautiful, peaceful protests and be part of the community of a beacon of that awareness. But I feel, like Jordan said, I feel very inspired with what has happened. And then I feel, like Jason said, a touch overwhelmed, but I definitely feel, I feel comfortable knowing that we are disrupting so many things in a way to change things for the better permanently.
And to piggyback off of all of that, what do you think makes this particular moment so much different than the last uprisings we had in the past 6 or so years? Like, what about this moment is like, fuck, we must really do a change and like change how we've been doing things?
Honestly, internet. That's really easy. Oh yeah. Sorry.
No, you good. You good. No, you good, Scott. You go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. The internet. And then also, honestly, just the fact that white people care. Like, because right. I think this was it's kind of funny that I'm sure many of us are getting, many of us, people of color, black people especially, are getting texts from our white friends, like checking in on us, which is really sweet. But this isn't new to us. So, like, you know, I see this stuff on the news and it's like the same outrage I've felt, I feel every time I see it. And I see it all the time. And, you know, it's like, it's not hard for me to relate to it because of the reason, like, you know, the latest hashtag is a hashtag instead of like a beautiful human, you know? And I think the internet definitely facilitated it. And obviously the video of George Floyd and those police officers was, you know, very hard to like explain away, even for the trolls. So I think that's like a big part of it. But yeah, I just think that it's not emphasized as often as it could be, that the people with the real power to change, the only people with the real power to change are the people who created the system in the first place. Mm. And I think that's the biggest difference.
Mm. Yeah. The point that's exactly, I've got to agree with you there, Sky. I think that there's a very, very exacting particular difference. And it is, in fact, seeing like so many of like my white friends as well as, you know, white culture. Hold on, before we go any further, let me put like a definition on this, a disclaimer on like what I believe whiteness to be. And I believe it to be a construct, an idea, a very particular wash over the idea of power. That's what I believe whiteness to be. I think, you know, if you want to technically speak, you know, there was an onset of whiteness once we were assimilating people of color into religions in order to obtain more power. And then we called it race so that we could then bifurcate them from what it was to be a Catholic or Anglo-Saxon derivative part of a religion. So when I say whiteness or white, I'm not necessarily speaking directly to the color of your skin. Just as much as when I say black or blackness, these are ideas. I focus more on the culture. And I focus more on what has been granted or accumulated by said culture by way of a system, which is what Sky mentioned earlier. But I think that seeing the idea of whiteness almost risk its own privilege at times, I've just never seen it before. And not like this. I really haven't. I may have seen it in piecemeal. I may have some friends or seen on a couple motivational videos on the internet, like, oh yeah, this white person came to the hood and did some push-ups with some, you know, niggas from 60s. Like, I may have seen that, but that's never been enough for me. And I'm just going to keep it 100 for everybody right now. Like, that's never been enough for me. So I don't want to understate the problem by overstating what we believe to be accomplishments. Like, this is not enough. And it's still not enough. And when Sky discussed the people in power and systems in place, one thing right that we must acknowledge right now is that Emo Night has a platform that they created, and they have a space that they created, and they're taking a risk having us on here, allowing us to talk our shit. We need to do more of this. You know what I'm saying? If you got a platform and you really believe in change and you really believe that this is a holistic sort of advantage that we can all benefit from if we all want to come together, then you got to take more risks. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I believe is I believe that right now I'm seeing people take more risks, but I got to keep it 100 because I can't be afraid to look like angry black guy no more. You know what I'm saying? My sisters shouldn't look like angry black women no more. We shouldn't be afraid of that. You know, I think that the world is like Trevor Noah said, you know, it's like as people are saying it, like the world is lucky that we just want equity and not revenge on motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? Like that, and that's just the reality. You know what I'm saying? I'm not here to invoke violence, but more so encourage power and for black people to understand how powerful we are. And that's okay. That's okay. We've been on the side of history where we've been told our whole fucking lives and generations that we're not. So when people come to you with that all lives matter bullshit, or people come at you like, well, what about me? And it's always been about you. Your relationship with power has always been that. It's always been about you. So when you get mad, you know what I'm saying, that we want to come and play and then we play it well or at times better, that's racist. Straight up, like, I just want to call it what it is. I'm tired of all these people being like, oh, well, you know what I'm saying? It's racist. That's what it is. And now let's define racism. It's the leveraging of power on me. There's no one has a concrete definition right now because it's so subjective. My definition that I subscribe to is the leveraging of power. And we never been in power. Not like that. You know, we had to create our own systems of power, our own governance. When we walk out the door, we have self-governance where we have to make sure that we don't say or look or feel or act in some type of way where we get popped. And that's crazy. Like, this is a burden that I just have to put out there right now. So the difference, I know this is a super long-winded answer, but I just wanted to get it out there in the beginning, is that this is about power. All of this is about power. And when we say something and we say it in a certain way, in a language that we have communicated with each other for so many years because we had our very identity stripped from us. When we learn in the books we didn't learn about black kings and queens. We learned about slavery and we didn't even learn about it right. We had to go and self-educate. We had to learn about epigenetics. We had to learn about blood trauma through the events that actually were degenerative to us. The violence that you see in the streets, that is because we had to learn that it was inherent. It's intrinsic. It is in us. And this is an experience that we've been feeling our whole lives. So when we come to punk rock and go, wait a minute, they're going to let us in? Hell yeah, let us bring our shit in too. And then we get silenced. And then we get called this. And then we get told we acting to this or that. That's not alternative to me. That's not punk rock. That's not what I came here for. And it has existed for so long, and people used to call me crazy for saying it, and now we're here. So I guess in short, after all that, in short, it's like, but you know what I'm saying? Like, in short, it's like the difference, there's no difference other than motherfuckers taking a risk. But we've been taking a risk the whole time. So while you patting yourself on the back and you hitting the hashtag and you putting up a black square, don't remember that we was out here the whole time fighting every day. And I think it's okay. You know what I'm saying? I see black faces right now. It's okay to feel like, you strong, that you, it's okay to feel like you did a lot of work, because you did. You are here right now. That's a lot of fucking work. So feel good about yourselves today, black people, for real, because they've been telling us not to for too damn long.
Amen.
Yes.
And hold up, I can top that. Jesus.
No, I'm sorry.
I love it. Not go, Jordan.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, I noticed a big, huge difference too. You know, even like, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago with Trayvon, I'm posting online saying stuff, and I got white friends being like, "Oh, I gotta make everything about race." Like, well, you know, and now, like, you know, a lot of those friends have changed their course, and the past couple of weeks, I'm mostly a lurker, but like different punk communities online on Facebook, like the 19 for Emo Night, Punk Rocky NBA. You know, different places on Reddit, and I was searching them, like seeing, like, are they saying stuff? Are they, you know, are they discussing this? And like a lot of those other communities weren't discussing anything, and some even went as far to remove comments on posts about, you know, what's going on right now. And their argument was like, oh, this isn't about politics, even though like the caption at the top of their page is like, oh, this page is for thought-provoking conversation. I'm like, this is a thought-provoking conversation, and you guys are silencing it. And then, but I saw Emo Night, you know, was you know, I've been outspoken, raising funds, so that really spoke to me. So I went on there and I said, you know, yeah, thank you all, that this is what we need. We need to be able to say and speak. And I'm aware it's a huge risk, and that's why those sites are silencing their comment sections. And I'm very thankful that y'all aren't doing this and you're letting us speak, because I have never been able to talk about, you know, this stuff in the punk scene and stuff. It's always been, you're making about race, why you gotta make about race? And like, and it's just great to finally be able to speak and be heard and not told that.
Also, just for the record, I want to kind of piggyback off of the energy that Jason had with that. Being black is the most punk rock thing, is the most punk thing you could possibly do. Being black is the most punk thing ever, and no one can ever take that from you. So to anyone that's ever questioned that, as someone that questioned that for a lot of his younger years, we are the most punk motherfuckers that have ever been on this planet, and that is a fact. Be proud to be punk as fuck. We automatically get it in. We automatically have it. It's our shit. Mm. But for stuff like this, it's like kind of disguise point, and then Jordan hitting that again. Because to be honest, I think that, like, Jordan, your post on the 19 Facebook group, because I saw that, that's why we're here having this dialogue. Like, you were the catalyst that, in my opinion, has allowed us to have this formulation for this topic. So thank you for so much for saying that. But then disguise point about kind of the internet being a big player of it, we've noticed a re-weaponization of the internet. It's because it's a generational thing. Notice our parents and our grandparents and their, you know, grandparents, for those who are still alive, they don't know how to utilize the internet. They have no way of utilizing this tool to its maximum capacity, to the best of its facilities. We do. Like, maybe some of our younger parents, younger Gen Xers, us and the Gen Zers that are now our juniors, we understand how the internet works. We were born on it. We know what this is. So we have a much more tactile, much more dexterity, I should say, to use the internet to come to central opinions and to check people, both fact check and gut check, as it needs to be done, to make sure that we're holding people accountable, because it is an agency thing. Like, you have the agency to stand by the side and not be a part of it. You have the agency to be at the front of it. Like, I was talking to some people in the UK, and they had reposted Devin Allen's photo from the Baltimore riots that was on the cover of Time. And I'm like trying to coordinate getting everyone to talk about this now, because we want to hear this across the globe in person almost. But you can also realize you can play to your strengths. Like, I've been a lobbyist. I've been a frontline. Couldn't have had this type of discourse and volatility in it until now. So it's like, time is a big factor for this. We had to time it out to where we're able to have this dialogue in almost near immediate real time.
I think too, I mean, one thing that bears mentioning to kind of bring all that together is that we're in a moment, I think, where the magic trick of America has been laid a bit bare, right? If we're talking about how this moment has kind of fed the moment of coronavirus that forced everyone inside, feeding into this moment. And part of that is because I think the understanding of America, the curtain has been pulled back, and the people who are most marginalized, the workers, the poor folks, they're the people who pull off the magic trick of America, but often aren't there gathering in the applause when the trick is done. And so I think those are the people who are kind of leading these movements. And those are the people who I think are in part responsible for really keeping going in the streets.
I like long awkward pause to make sure no one
That's a good moderator. That's a good moderator.
It's like reading the room, make sure everyone's like, you know, done gathering thoughts. All of that, I piggyback on all of that. That was just all. And I do want to thank Emo Night. I wasn't waiting to dance to say thank you, but like it is, I feel like the first time in like a very long time that someone's risked their own neck and their paychecks to put some loud Black folks on the forefront to talk about race in a very candid way, because we have these conversations, you know, offline with our friends and closed doors, but we never do it on a public sphere because we're all kind of afraid of losing jobs or losing respect or whatever the fuck. And so thank you for giving us this platform to actually speak candidly about all that. And with that said, in what ways can the industry as a whole kind of like move forward from here on out with what's happening now in our pop culture media, everything that's happening since George Floyd's death?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Jason talked about the way that history is taught in America, right? Which is vital. But when we go into talking about what we're here to talk about, particularly the scene and beyond, the way music is taught in America is also flawed, right? Or the way that Black people will have to exist on these scenes in particular is in some way, they have to be kind of removed from the roots of their Blackness in order to be acceptable. Like for example, think about Sky's Bass Plan, right? Which is rooted in funk. It's rooted in jazz. It's rooted in all these art forms that are very much, you think about Fever 333, right? Which is rooted in a Black revolutionary politic. But when you often see people talk about, like when I've been at issue shows and I've been at Fever 333 shows, I've been at Fuck You Pay Us shows, like I've been at these shows and so much of the language around, what is being presented to people, largely white audiences, is stripping people of the historical roots of the sound and the historical roots of the politic. And, you know, I was thinking recently about the forefather of all punks, Little Richard, who we lost recently. Mm-hmm. And he lived a life where he had to consistently, I mean, for the majority of his life, remind people of what he'd earned, right? Remind people of his greatness, remind people of the fact that he was the architect, that he built the house that we all live in. Right? And I don't think that has done a service, that didn't do a service to his music, that didn't do a service to his livelihood. And I often think that a lot of spaces in these scenes want Black people in the room to say, well, look, you know, there's a couple Black people at our shows. You know, we got a couple Black folks at our shows. So, you know, we're doing a thing. But that doesn't really mean anything when you consider what has to be stripped for that Black person to be accepted in the room. And so some of that too, some of that I think is about teaching history and teaching the fact that what people are consuming, what white people are consuming at these shows is rooted in a Black history of music and an understanding of Black understanding of music. I'm happy Sky is here because I think about Sky's Bass Plan a lot and about how, like what I hear in that. Like I hear, you know, I'm from Ohio, you know, birthplace of funk music. And I hear like old 70s funk in that. And I hear 50s and 60s jazz in that. But so often I've heard those parts of his music and other Black musicians on the scene. I've heard them be stripped of that history.
You know, it's crazy that you mentioned that. Also, I appreciate that. Ah, sorry. Anyways, everybody in this entire chat just got really anxious because of it. Yeah, it's crazy that you mentioned that because I went to school, I went to like college for music, and it was like a focus on jazz. And there was like kind of a funny, clicky sort of thing where it's like here's the trad jazzers, the skinny tie jazz guys. And then over here is like, you know, the weird, like experimental composer guys. Like jazz, I feel like has been around long enough to where, I feel like there's like kind of a cycle of genres where it usually comes from black roots, gets popular ish with black artists. White artists will like piggyback off of that and it'll get mainstream. And then that genre as a whole becomes white music. Like in 2020, you go to a jazz show, you don't see a whole lot of black people in the like in the seats. Same with like blues, same kind of thing. And going to school, it was interesting because within these cliques, the kind of loser kids or whatever, you know, the equivalent were all the guys who played modern black music. So like the hip hop guys and like the R&B guys or whatever. I feel like it would have been different, a little bit different on the East Coast, but still, like, it was just a kind of a weird thing to realize that like how much aesthetics mattered. Because it's still coming from the same place. It's still coming from the black experience, but because it hadn't been whitewashed enough and the people around me didn't have enough like white heroes from that specific genre, then it was kind of looked down upon. So like I kind of had to like go out of my way to make sure that I was still practicing black music. And then, you know, obviously that's kind of like, and I guess that's still kind of the thing too. In the alternative scene, now that I'm like, you know, in more established, I have to go out of my way to make sure that my roots are like, you know, really, really prevalent. But it's interesting too, because for so long, the stuff that kind of made me an outcast now makes me special to the people that like, I guess, that look like me, which is awesome, because when I was like going to Warped Tour and stuff, I had a mental list of every single black person on stage. And everybody, you know, like anytime someone threw R&B and like post hardcore or something, that's when I would pay attention, because like, oh, that's like, you know, that's what like my music or whatever. Obviously, you know, there's levels to it. But I think as far as the industry is concerned, I feel like that can't be ignored. It's kind of, it feels like it should be obvious by this point that anytime black music gets a platform, it makes the industry money. So it feels like it shouldn't be so hard to get people to like realize that, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a really solid position on that, but that's just observations.
No, you're absolutely right though, Sky. Here's the thing. And I've been looking at this for a long time. I'm going to keep it like super real with everybody in this thing. Okay. So I grew up on welfare, Section 8 housing. I lived in a house when I was a little bit older where drugs were in and out of that house. I learned very quickly in a very lateral method on how money works. Okay. I also learned how money is kept from you and how money is made by you. Now, these are very different things, okay? Because you can be making money and people will, and then you lose the focus on the money that's being kept from you. Because in a lot of ways, this is a zero-sum game, okay? Even though they're printing money or they're typing money into a screen and making it and offsetting economies and world economies and local economies, there's still people that when you make money, they may feel as though, and in a lot of ways they are, losing their money. Okay. So we have to first understand that. We got to understand two pillars in American, the foundation of America. And that's Judeo-Christian and Anglo-Saxon values that were propped up and, you know, to build the country and capitalism. Okay. So this is money, right? And what we did back then was we utilized black bodies. Again, in the North, it was textile, generally, larger wealth building. In the South, it was cotton. Cotton was the number one, the largest piece of wealth building in American history in proportion ever. To build a superpower economically, we used black bodies to pick and pull and make and serve cotton. That was our largest export. Okay. Now we have to think about that. When we became the superpower, what were we doing? What were we utilizing? We're using black bodies, okay? We move forward. And this is all coming together, I promise. My father, later down the line, my dad's making music. He's a man from Milwaukee. He's a young brother. He's playing with Little Richard. He's in Little Richard's band. He's playing in War. He's playing with Eric Burden the Animals. And he does a solo thing. Then, as a young man trying to make it, they kept education on the business from my father. And they gave him a record deal. They gave him a management deal. They said, here you go, young brother. We're going to make you a star. We ain't going to teach you about back end, but we're going to show you everything on the front end. So we're going to show you all the money we spending on you. We're going to show you the cars. We're going to show you the planes. We're going to show you the clothes we get you. We're going to show you all that. But we ain't going to tell you where it's coming from. Now, this goes to education. Now, they're going to keep you from understanding what it means to have wealth and building equity and assets, okay? You yourself as a black person, to Sky's point, it's a gift to be black. Straight up, it's a gift to be black. You are an asset. Back to the point that was made, Hanif said, okay? Hanif said, having people in the room to say you had black people in the room, not only that, brother, they also keep us in there to keep taking from us. What did he look like when he was doing that dance? What did he sound like when he was singing that song? Well, I'm going to go take that on a platform where they're going to look, because they're too afraid to look at him doing his shit. But they're going to Elvis this motherfucker, and they're going to put it on a white face and a white platform, and then they will then generate a financial gain from it. This is not crazy talk. Like, none of this is a conspiracy, because you can literally just go through the line. I have my father as a direct example. And going back to me on welfare, it's because of that. It's because of that thing. It's because the white industry took black music, profited off of it, and then made sure that they had a line that was cyclical of black people that wanted what you showed them on the front end, and they gave them that and then took everything on the back end. They keep us from understanding what it means to build assets and have equity. This might be a whole side-ass lesson right here. But black people in this music industry, in the arts, in the world, we must understand how important it is to have our own equity, our own exchange of commerce. We must understand what it means to actually build each other up. Not just saying, all right, brother, I see you. Not just posting, but reaching out to your brothers and your sisters and going, I have this thing that's going to make me some money. Why don't we make some money? Why don't we have a scene? Why don't we talk about that? We have to do this for ourselves, not because we are trying to be so esoteric that we cut everyone out. But we've been playing this game for over 450 years. We've been playing this game. You expect us to make a post and to step a few miles, and then that game is just going to switch? We have to be actively participating in what we do to help each other. And that's the one thing I want to say about this scene. We are a minority in a minority in a subcultural scene. And still, we are being taken from and not shown any sort of gratitude or understanding or recognition on what's been taken from us. So I'm not trying to, we're not going to start the emo night Black Panther party today, but we do need to look at these things, and we need to stop. We need to remove. We need to eradicate the stigma of what it means to empower your people, people that look like you, because the stigma is so washed over with white power. It's so prevalent with everything that whiteness has done that only offers nepotism to white people, which has kept them in power, that we're afraid to offset it. We're afraid to look crazy when we offset it. And that's a big problem. So in this industry, do not be afraid to ask for what you deserve. Do not be afraid to tell it like it is. This is our music. I'm not saying other people can't enjoy it. We should all enjoy it. But I have to say it's our music, because not only have we been had that taken from us, the history of rock and roll we had taken from us, but then we get called crazy for trying to be a part of it by our own people. By our own, I remember being coming home with skinny jeans from Hot Topic and getting busted on by everybody in the hood. You know what I'm saying? We're so twisted with ourselves that we have to take a moment and remember what it means to give and empower and to build up, both with financially, you know what I'm saying, on a historical level, but also emotionally. So the music business, straight up, first and foremost, stop Elvising us, you know what I'm saying, and show up before someone is dead on the street. Or we get together and we take what we know is an asset. That's why they keep us around. We take our asset and we go somewhere else with it. So they're going to have to come visit us. They're going to have to come to the hoods, or they're going to have to come to the shows that we make. They're going to have to listen to music we listen to. We are everywhere. But for some reason, we ain't making that money. By my estimation, that is plunder. They are taking from us still. And that's everybody on the in the music industry, straight up. That's everybody. Like, I still to this day haven't seen someone who's offering fair deals to people to offset. It might be a couple. We got a Diddy. We got Jay and Beyonce. I see it. That's what's up. I love them. They are an inspiration. There's not enough, because there's so many of us doing amazing things. So that is what needs to happen. We can't rely on this industry. It was never built to help us. Let's get that out of our heads. We need to help each other. We should be calling you. Sky hit me up. I'm just going to say it right now. Sky hit me up like, this is what's going on with me. What's up with you? I see this. I said, hey, for sure, I got this thing, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And we've been talking about this thing. And that's what, you know, that's what this is all about. So I'm going to do these long-winded things because I've been thinking about it for so long, and I hope that it benefits in some way. But we have to work for each other and not be afraid of being called racist, because straight up, we can't be. You know what I'm saying? We can be prejudiced. We can be prejudiced as a motherfucker. We can say crazy shit. And it's fucked up. And I'll say that if you say some shit about because the color of their skin or the creed, that's fucked up. But we ain't racist. We just trying to fucking get in the game. We trying to get to the fucking starting line.
Yeah, you can't be.
I want to pick it back up. Oh, sorry. Go, Sky.
I was just going to say, because I know, like, people, that is a controversial thing, but I completely agree, because you can only punch down in a system of oppression. It only goes one way. The oppressed cannot oppress. I mean, you can, but it's like you're just working for the oppressed. It's like it doesn't work like that. I don't know. All right, I'm done. What were you saying?
No. So I was going to say, most definitely, first off, two things. Jason, my mom just texted me. She says she loves what you said and keeps saying that. So thank you to my mother. She said like, she loves that.
Just now.
Hell yeah.
Second off, the homie Ursula, she hit me up the other day. She said to send love, send peace, all that. Yep. Make sure to put that out there. Send me some photos of you in high school. So to go into a short story where it's a personal experience with it, I've noticed that some, like, for what the industry needs to do and what we can do for ourselves, there's the working smart and the working hard method of going at this. Not everyone's going to be a rapper. Not everyone's going to be a rock star. Not everyone's going to be, you know, a country sensation. Like, that is by far large, like, the under on the over under for making it in this industry. I know, like, I'm one of them. I'm like, I can sing, but I can't sing well. I played the trumpet. I never played the guitar, the bass, or the drums. So my instrument's not conventionally, like, popular, but I'm really good at, like, I learned how to mix soundboards when I was like 8 years old. I was mixing and mastering live concerts at like 10. And then I just realized that's my way in. You can go other avenues to kind of pincer the process. Cause if we have a lot of people trying to be rock stars and rap artists and these moguls in the industry and these people to make the deals, there's a whole other section of the industry that's free real estate. Because the sooner you can educate someone on, here's how you tech for a venue, here's how you do the sound for a venue, here's how you manage a tour, here's how you book a tour, here's how you talk to a sponsor, stuff that I've been doing in the last 5 or 6 years and my 8 years total here in Baltimore, I've just been flipping the whole script and saying, I'm going to teach you guys everything I've learned in 30 years of being alive about how to be a member of the industry and support the industry and take over portions of the industry that we can easily fill and operate to a much higher caliber. Because just like we have people that get shitty contracts, we have people that go to shitty venues where you have a promoter that takes most of the money out before you get paid, and you got to chase this guy down and go get your pay. That's not even really worth it. Yeah. So I think one thing that we can do as members of the industry, and we can show members of the industry that we need, is let's make sure that if we're going to talk about the scene, let's cover the other areas that are back end, that are mid end, that are managerial, that are able to support us. I want to manage and I want to book tours for all of my friends, for all of my Black friends, every artist that I know, rap, hip hop, whatever, it doesn't matter, like rock music, whatever. I want to help them learn how to broker their deals, like you were saying, Jason, so they get the maximum pay that the spot's willing to pay for it. That they're not getting shafted 5 years into a 10-year deal. They're not stuck doing something where they got to go break something to build equity. Oh, sorry. There's more you can do to build the equity, like, laterally, not just vertically. You can cover a wide berth and you can cover the entire building top to bottom. But I like to work smart. I think very hard about shit and then I work very smart at what I thought about. So that way, if I can cover both or I can cover one that'll give me more foundation, I'm going wide and I'm taking everybody with me, because then you guys can get on my shoulders as my family and my support, and I can push you further to where you need to go to get the thing that's going to eventually make us all in a better position overall.
That's a huge point, man. Now that you mention it, I realize I don't think I've ever worked with a black record exec, a black manager. I can't remember a black promoter. Like, that's big.
Mm-hmm.
Can I, I'm interested, Courtney, in, I know you're supposed to be the moderator, but I'm interested because I've been thinking about photography too. Like, I don't, you know, the pictures I take at shows are like all of us, you know what I mean? Like, trying to like slip through a crack in some bodies to get a picture of you. But when I think about like the work of the photographer on the scene, like, you don't see a lot of black folks. You particularly don't see a lot of black women. You particularly don't see like a lot of black non-men. And so I'm wondering, like, what you're seeing, if you're seeing that space being taken up in different ways than it has traditionally been.
Oh, now I am. When I first started coming up, it was just me. It was me and my sister at shows. And I met my friend Amber at a local show, and she had a camera as well. And I was like, who's this black girl with a camera? Like, first of all, I don't know you, but also, like, cool, there's two of us. But she went on to like become my hairstylist later on. But at the time, it was just me at shows. And I would sneak my camera in and tell the security guards that it's film. It's not real. Like, no one uses film. Like, let me be against the barricade or whatever. And so they fall for it because it was 2008. But it became this thing where I only saw dudes in the pit. I saw one female photographer. It was Lisa Johnson. And I remember stopping her and asking her, like, how can I be on the other side of the barricade? Like, I love this side, but I want to be on that side. And she taught me to pretty much keep doing film, keep doing what I love, and to follow my friends, essentially, like, photograph your friends, because your friends will end up being on the stage. And that's what I did. But being the only girl in the pit is, oh my God, it's, and being the only black girl at these shows, it was such a, I felt out of place, but I didn't let that stop me from going, if that makes sense, because I found a home in punk rock. I found a home in emo. It became all I knew. And I want to give back to the community. But the only way I could do that was through pictures, because I can't play worth a damn. I wanted to be a writer. Like, I wanted to write about music, but I was more in love with making the photographs and actually writing about the experience. And in recent years, I'm seeing more and more black non-dudes in the pit and just like with their own blogs, their own websites. And that makes my heart sing, because if I had saw that when I was 15, 16, I probably would have stuck with it a lot longer. But there was a lot of white dudes, a lot of shitty white dudes who are just so full of themselves.
Preach on it.
But yeah, it's this whole thing of, had I let their shitty words like get to me, I probably wouldn't be here today. But I saw more as them being jealous that I really fought for my place in this industry, and not like, my grandfather gave me this camera and I'm here because I know so-and-so in the band.
Right.
For years, I knew nobody in the band. I was just there because I wanted to photograph my favorite artist.
I've been thinking about that. I mean, the thing I've been thinking about too, I'm too old and exhausted for the pit these days. So, like, you know, catch me at the show, but catch me like leaning on a pillar in the back, you know.
Catch me sitting down. I'm too tired.
Really. But I'm also, the thing I've been on lately is, because I've been thinking a lot about coming up, I think it was maybe the same for a lot of us, where like we were the only black folks in the pit. But also, you know, for me coming up, I was often the only or one of the few black men in the pit, but there were like black women or black trans folks or the cripple who were in the back, who like felt like they had no place inside of that space because the people, even who looked like them, wouldn't take care of them. And so another thing I've been thinking about too is, when I look back whimsically and or romantically about my time in the scene and the violence in the scene and the pit and all this stuff, I also have been thinking about, there's complicity too in being present in that, and being present in that and not looking out for the folks who look like you, you know what I mean? And not looking out for like the Black women who also are trying to be in the pit, or the Black queer folks who maybe would get thrown around a little more aggressively. And so I've been thinking too about how this kind of eager awakening of a community of us taking care of each other in these scenes, my hope is that it extends, and I see it, I know it is. I mean, I go to shows and stay outside the pit, but I can still see, you know, like I see the differences that many of us probably see. It's different than it was for me in 2005 or whatever. But I really hope that continues. Like I think about, you know, a band I mentioned earlier is Fuck You Pass, and I'm thinking about them because I was at a show of theirs a few years back, and I remembered seeing so many Black people in the room. And that band, I don't know if anyone's hip, but great band, obviously, they're brilliant. There's like a level of rage that is present on in their shows, but it's also like, it's not aimless rage, right? It's a rage channeled through love that I think only Black people can access. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, kind of like when our parents got mad at us, but they were punishing us through gritting their teeth through an immense love that brought them to that point, right? And I think about that, and I think about that show and how it really changed and altered my experience of what it looked like for a room full of Black punks to take care of each other, a room full of Black punks who were angry and for the first time felt like they could arrive nakedly angry in front of each other and be held. And so I don't know. This is kind of rambling, but I thought about what you said about the pit, and I was thinking about a way to hopefully expand that feeling beyond to the shows that we all do and all go to.
Well, I meant pit as a photo pit, because I'm too fragile to be in the actual pit. I meant I was in the pit probably once, and I'm like, I will probably lose a teeth or two, so I decided to not be in the pit, but the photo pit was where I found my home. And even then, like, I'm too old to be in the photo pit because I'm just not aggressive enough to be there for 3, 4, or 5 songs, and that's would rather be backstage and like document the real life of it all. But even that was a privilege of me biding my time and actually like fighting for that place of like, yo, I'm not here to sleep with anyone. I just want to photograph you as a human. Like, I'm here to document you through and through. The stage is one part. I want the actual human part. But that took a lot of me having to like fight off those assholes who thought I was there for other reasons. Because you see a girl, you assume she's someone's girlfriend, and it's like, I don't care. If I was someone's girlfriend, I'm still here to work. So like,
right.
We are, but no, yeah, I've, in recent years, I've seen people both in the pit and the photo pit, and it makes my heart sing because the internet has made it easier for everyone to kind of find their own place and make their own friends and make their own rules, which I didn't have way back in 2005, 2006, 2007, whatever, when I was coming up. So yeah, to like add on to what Jason was saying about like making your own community, I wanted to ask if you guys have any mentors and or you guys mentoring anyone within like the community to help them kind of like offset everything you guys endured.
I have, there's a band over here on my side of the country close to where I'm from called Dangers. The singer is also, he's a biracial cat. He talks a lot, very, very daringly and very nakedly about his experience with punk rock. And I think it's really beautiful. His name's Al Brown. He was just really like the most immediate representation of what I was feeling at all times on stage. His rage was primal, not primitive, but primal. It was honest. It was focused in such a way that was so impactful. He was so about his shit. Like, he took so many hits for saying the things he said, quite literally and figuratively, just took them. And again, like we stated earlier, I feel like that is a trait, again, just by way of our own blood trauma. The way that we take the hits and keep going and make something beautiful out of it, ashy to classy, you know what I'm saying? Like the Biggie mindset, it's like, I just don't know many other people that do it that way. You know what I'm saying? Many other cultures that do it that way. So for me, it was like, I had one person in our immediate scene like that. Now my best friend, Randall, he was he was from the same hood as me. We grew up, we skated together. We were, we got into punk rock together. So having him, when I talk about making a community for us, he really, really helped me. Because literally we was two people. like two of us, you know what I'm saying? And we had to fight our way through everything. And to this day, even right now, people that we considered our friends are getting called out right now. You know what I'm saying? Like that, it's nothing new. This isn't by way of mysticism that this thing is popped up, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, there's that. And then as far as like, I had a teacher who actually got fired from my school. So again, real quick history. When I was originally where I was supposed to go for my first like district, my high school actually, the high school I was supposed to go to in the beginning, Inglewood High, got shut down for a little bit. Obviously, our property taxes weren't paying enough into the school, couldn't operate, shut down, whatever. My mom's lied and got me into another district early on, and I got to stay in that district, so I went to another school. And a lot of what I was learning, for the most part, I always had to go and find an alternative perspective. Always, 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 for the most part. Then I met this man who taught in the juvenile detention districts. So he would go into juvenile detentions and speak and teach these children. He was their teacher. These young people, predominantly black, brown people, non-white people. He came to my school. He taught an AP American history. Now, you already know where this is going to go, right? He was out there teaching me and all of us what it was. And he was making me feel comfortable with my punk rock isms as a black person. He's saying, no, that's what it is. You should challenge the system. And so he went off curriculum, taught us off the curriculum. Mr. Leith is his name. I will always, always, always have so much love and praise for him. And he got fired eventually for doing this very thing. Now, this goes all the way back to what I was saying earlier. It's about education. They're not educating us because that will empower us. And if we become, the moment we become educated, they know that concurrently we will become upset. Because the truth of the history and the education that we deserve is that it is filled with plight, plunder, and an aggressive methods of destruction and degenerative behavior. So as soon as we learn this, of course, we're going to get upset. But then, this is my theory in college before I left, I feel as though they accidentally created a superhuman when they put us in chains. And when they made us do everything physically, and then when we had to teach ourselves how to get what we deserve, they created a damn superhuman, which is why you see us on the cover of Sports Illustrated all the time. It's why you see us crushing it on stages. It's why you see us taking, because we've been enduring this plight for so long that you have to be superhuman. You have to be. Just to get here, you have to be. You know what I'm saying? And to ask more of us, it's unreasonable. So to what I'm saying, Mr. Leith, I had someone in my scene that really did represent what I was feeling, especially as like a biracial person trying to find my identity in a very white scene, that almost convinced me that I didn't have a place here and that I had to look like this just to enjoy the music that we made.
You know what? Because I was thinking while you were talking, when I first started touring on like the, I guess, kind of professional level or whatever, my first two tours were huge for me because what I didn't realize is that I was never going to have another tour like that. But my first two tours, the majority of the people on stage, or like not majority, but like almost half, were brown or people of color. Jason was on the second one. And that was huge. And like, honestly, like, you know, thinking about like role models in the scene and stuff, Jason, you're one of them, like big time. Not to put more pressure on you, because I know plenty of people like feel that way anyways. But that was just like such a cool experience. And I didn't realize how precious that kind of like unity I felt on those couple tours were, how precious that was. It's not like every other tour has just been like a cesspool of racism and everybody's like, you know, throwing like eggs at me or whatever. But, you know, it's like, it's crazy to feel seen. Kind of going to what Hanif said, did I say your name right? Please tell me I said your name right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
kind of going to what you said, you know, you were talking about like that, you know, being in the mosh pit and like feeling that like kind of sense of release. Only when you said that, I realized I've never had that. And I think that, you know, and I love, like, I'm in mosh retirement at the moment, but, you know, I've had my fair share, and, you know, it was fun, but it never felt like a spiritual, like, kind of cathartic thing that some people describe it, you know, like Slayer guy, right? Like that kind of thing. And thinking about it, I guess it kind of makes sense because it's never really been my my music. Not like all the way. It's been like, you know, like I'll go, I specifically remember this one time I saw Molotov Solution and they had a black guitarist and he literally looked like, he looked like culturally black. And I was just like blown away. There's this guy in the deathcore band. He's wearing baggy pants, fitted cap. Like I need to go talk to him. Right. That was sick, but it still felt like, you know, the voice was still like a white voice. And I didn't realize that literally until you just said that, I didn't realize that disconnect was so prevalent in this music. I think like, I think maybe also that's why, Jason, I think maybe that's also why your voice means as much as it does to me, because, you know, you don't shy away from this stuff. And that's the most punk rock thing to me, is just not being a pussy about it and speaking from your own, like, from your own perspective, you know, and like my own perspective, as far as I can, you know, just thinking to my like off the top of my head, the person who's fought the hardest for that perspective is you. So I appreciate you.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, man, Jason, you're super inspiring, bro. Just have to say.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it. I think that everybody here is really important, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is just because of, honestly, the only reason I feel, even, I mean, I would probably keep doing this shit, but I wouldn't feel as as engaged in the issue if I didn't have other people that are out here taking the risks with me, looking like me, looking more, you know, more phenotypically like the thing we're fighting for. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I keep it 100 with that too. You know, motherfuckers be like, oh, he's Puerto Rican. Oh, he's Persian. Oh, he's, you know, my ethnic ambiguity, you know, ambiguity as well is something that's kind of like a sidebar of like also the struggle that I've had in this scene. But I just want to make it very clear. And I do appreciate the compliments and the comments. I really do. I just want to make it very clear that that I am simply, truly, truly just inspired by knowing that y'all exist in the way that you do so fearlessly, you know, naturally, inherently aggressive. Like, you know what I'm saying? Aggressive relatively, right? The scene sees us in a way where we come in, if we just have to be there inherently, we're representing ourselves aggressively, and that's not even by our actions. So if I may, to everybody on here, everyone that has, you know, whether I can, you know, I know there's a bunch of other pages and shit, but everybody on here that has had to literally fight just to be present in this thing, you got to think about that. You got to bear the emotional burden of being in a room that looks nothing like you. Not only that, but has assimilated things that have actually threatened your life. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we gotta keep it a buck right now. Like, punk rock and rock music has not been a safe space for anybody, really, as much as it has been for white cisgender males. And that's just what it is. Like, I really want to make that clear too. I don't want people getting touched. You know what I'm saying? Because this just is what it is. Facts are facts. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I think that everybody on here that is not, you know, doesn't fit that description right now should feel proud of themselves. You know what I'm saying? And like, while we do have people that we look toward, I would like everybody on here to look inward right now and understand how powerful, how important, and how integral you are to me being able to feel like I have someone to speak to straight up. I couldn't just speak to myself on this shit. So all y'all, everybody, real shit, everybody is just as powerful, if not more, than the things I've said and done and whatever. So back to y'all. Thank you, for real.
Jason, how you gonna tell me something I just realized I didn't even learn from you that I just learned from you? Damn, I just unlocked it in my head right there. But you raised a good point, and I wanna like pose a question that we hopefully can dive into as well. But like, being not phenotypically like black, like what you think when you think of a black person, because I see us in this room here, I see all the people in my community, I see the me's and the like me's of my community, and even I representing myself, I don't look phenotypically black. I have a lot of ambiguous features, but one thing that did kind of call me to look inwards was I don't see enough of me in that room. So when I find them, I have to be a mentor for them, only because of the fact, like, I was born in 1990. I just happen to be older than most of these people. So we talked a lot about people that we had as mentors that we looked up to. Like, I looked up to, like, Pharrell. Like, that was my number one influence of, like, how to be a punk black person while still keeping true to, like, your roots on a lot of stuff, which eventually became Kid Cudi. And that was, like, the thing that I just happened to embody by being in the same lane as how Pharrell was living. But it was like, I wanted to make sure that in my local communities, because, like, I'm from the Mid-Atlantic, that means I can go down to Virginia, I can go up to, like, Philly and go to Jersey and Delaware and still see people like me for the most part in these communities. I wanted to make sure that there were those, like, people, those pillars in their community that were like, yo, I'm a brown person. I'm a black person. I've been in the scene since I was a child. I'm still here despite what's happening with it. And I contribute. I have many ways that I'm involved in the scene beyond just showing up and going and getting in the pit. But it's like, I started mentoring people when I moved to Baltimore after I graduated college. Cause, like, I went to school for communication theory. So I went for, like, psychology and the application of communications interculturally, interpersonally, like, non-verbally, like, all of the things that we need to be able to efficiently operate in space, which when I was rediscovering and kind of coming own it back into my blackness in my mid-20s, it was just taking apart what I had learned and finding out how to make that actionable as a mentor to people that are like me and that want to be in the same positions that I was able to put myself into in this community, and then just as a person of color in general. So I just took the route of, I know the people that I idolize and that I like to see as my parasocial mentor. Like, I learned from them, but they don't know me. So in turn, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to add the piece that's missing. I'm going to be extremely accessible, like, hyper accessible. I don't mind if my phone goes off all day. It doesn't take much energy to respond to a text of someone with a, hey, I'm feeling overwhelmed right now, but this is how I'm feeling. Hit me back later. I got you. And I just have purposeful statements of how I do that. But then it's like I was saying earlier, I'm taking people under my wing that are taking punk mentality in the rap space. And it's like, cool, you want to do that? Here's how to be punk in the rap space and like really find tenets of punk that we own and embody and put that as your best foot forward while still being able to get a check and get paid for what you need to do to make sure you have that. Mm-hmm. So my goal is now I want to be like the people that I look for to give me direction and guidance in how to do it in their way. I want to be able to say that I operated and embodied some of their best principles, yours included, everyone here's included, into the just younger than me's and the generation that's going to be coming up behind me. I want to lead them from behind while still being a visible pillar in the front.
I'm interested in Courtney's answer to this too, because I feel like we are, the two of us at least, are archivists in a certain way. You know, like I can't play any instrument very well. I was in a band that was extremely short lived. We broke up in the middle of our first show.
Oh, and my so, God.
For me, like writing and criticism, journalism, long form writing, whatever you want to call it. When I was coming up, the music writers I read were almost all white, and they would write about bands as if I knew who they were already, right? So Lester Bangs wrote about The Clash as if I knew who The Clash was already. Real Marcus wrote about the band as if I knew who the band was already. And it allowed me to engage with a type of searching, right? It allowed me to understand that these things were happening and I could seek out those bands on my own. And so my approach in terms of mentorship, especially with young black writers who are writing about music scenes that are punk or hardcore or emo or any scene, is that I hope that in my work, I am writing about bands I love as though a reader knows them already. I'm writing about Fever 333 or Issues or these bands as if someone has already been immersed in their catalog, right? Because the searching is where I think, and I'm very against explanation. And I think a lot of black creatives should be against explanation, right? Because the people you're talking to will understand where you're coming from and everyone else will have to get there on their own, right? But I'm interested in Courtney as someone who also archives through photos. Are you, I don't know, did you have mentors? Are you mentoring people?
My mentors were my teachers in journalism. I first started off as, you know, a writer. So I went to school for journalism, and I think first, second semester, I decided to switch from writing to photo. So photojournalism was like my pre-major before going to art school. But my mentors were the teachers who gave me the reading material to like go forth and like look past who we're teaching in class, which I wish they did this to everyone, but I love that they singled me out and went, hey, I know what you're doing. How about you look at this photographer or look at this photo series or something. But yeah, currently just artists. I've met them, but like artists who don't know who I am or my mentors, because up until I think my sophomore-ish year of college, I had no idea that there were Black female artists making art about their family. I thought it was just me being like, Mom, Dad, I love taking pictures. Let me photograph you. I had no idea there was a simple side of photography. I thought it was all high art, polished photographs. But a teacher told me about Carrie Mae Weems, who I immediately fell in love with. And the way she photographed her family felt as if I was part of her family. Like, she gave such an insight to her world that made me feel like, whoa, Black women can do more than just be the mammy or whatever. They can cry, they can laugh, they have joy, they have anger, they all of it's valid. And the way she did that made me feel like, okay, I have a place in this world. And I brought that to my music photography, because there's no disconnect to me. It's one big, it's the same thing. So my mentors were photographers who don't know me, but I do try to mentee people, or I guess mentor people, but it's more of a just friends who ask me for help, and me not going, go to school for it. Don't want to teach you. It's like, no, let me save you some money, because I'm here and I'm full of all this knowledge. Let me just give it to you. But yeah, a lot of the mentors I had were just people who were taking photographs that weren't the ones you see on the cover of magazines, because that was never a thing I wanted to do. I love those photographs. I love portraiture, but I was always drawn to the real life, the like at home stuff, the on the bus, the backstage. Emily Driscoll. I was probably 15 years old when I saw her photographs in AP, and it was like their special Warped Tour summer, whatever edition. And I was flipping through the magazine, and I saw a photograph of Pete Wentz backstage looking disgusting, gross, and sweaty. But I was like, this is the most real photograph of this dude I've seen in so long. Who is this person? How can I like digest all her material? And turns out she was in Beyond the Coast, like their photographer. She followed Manchester and Kevin Devine, and just her photographs of these artists in such a real way made me really appreciate music much more than the live stuff she was doing. And so through those photos, I was like mentoring myself through her work. Like, long-winded answer to your very short question.
No, that was a good answer. I think too, I will say that a part of mentorship for me, I hear from a lot of young Black punks who come up, who read my work, and they're like, I want to write about my time on the scene. I'm just so angry. I'm angry about how my scene is mostly white. I'm angry about how the white people on my scene treat me, and I want to write about it. And the thing I always want to say, or the thing I always do say, is don't give them that. Undoubtedly, you can write about a great many things that don't, because I think when we start talking about centering whiteness, you're centering whiteness even if you provide your anger as a platform for them to see themselves, right? And so when I hear from a lot of young Black punks about how they want to write about the racism on their punk scene, I don't discourage that. I mean, I think that conversations about it are good, but I think the work has to be centered on what you love, what you see of yourself in the punk scene, what you see of yourself in these bands that you are being told that aren't for you, right? Because the white folks in your punk scene don't deserve your anger.
Nope.
Right? I think there's a difference between rage and anger too. And I don't have maybe time to dissect those two things, but I think they perhaps deserve your rage, but they don't deserve your sustained anger. And so that is the biggest, when I hear from young Black punks who want to write, that is kind of what I lead with.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Damn, it's actually important. Yeah,
I love that. I love that. Also to Hanif and Courtney, just understand that this relationship between artist, writer, journalist, photographer, it's a symbiotic relationship. And we must understand the symbiotic nature of everyone on this call. I think we should remember this, is that while we may be the ones like sort of passing the baton back and forth and speaking, I do believe that we must lend credence and affect the empowerment upon everyone. And so that we know that it's a holistic, symbiotic thing where we're all sort of feeding into the greater good and the effort that we're trying to accomplish here. So Courtney and Hanif, thank you. You know, we really, really, this would be nothing. You know, it's like Warhol and Basquiat, right? Like it wouldn't be the same impact without y'all. And I just want to celebrate y'all real quick on that, because I haven't gotten to tour with y'all the way I have with some of these other people. I haven't got, you know what I'm saying? So just thank you. And everyone on this Zoom meeting, thank you for taking this time. And remember, please remember this one, if anything else, for me at least, the symbiotic nature of our efforts and what they mean, everything, good and bad, good and bad. I spoke earlier about my homeboys, plural, that are in trouble right now. And you know what I'm saying? Like, you should be, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like a child, right? Like if a child does the wrong thing and 5 years later, the parent goes, damn, why is this kid so problematic? It's because 5 years ago, you didn't say shit. It's because five years ago, you didn't raise that child the way you knew how to raise that child. And if people want to be so childish right now in our scene, they want to talk on the internet, but don't want to call you directly. They want to talk about this. They want to be excused from their actions because they think that them being in a band or a platform on the internet or in a production company or whatever excuses them from what they need to come to terms with. They can't. You can't just absolve yourself of what you've done just because you are in a position that you created by people not fucking paying attention. Straight up. So I think that, again, all good points, all bad points, you must understand that every step you take, because we are so microcultural still, we might have Hot Topic, we might have K-Rock and this, that, whatever, but we're still microcultural. Therefore, everything that happens, the reaction is so immediate. We're going to feel it. And that's why we, the people of color on this call, it's why we've been feeling this for so long. You didn't even got to say shit to us. I know you was using the N-word. I know you was thinking we shouldn't have been there at that show. I know you was afraid when I pulled up in my Impala with the subs in the back. I know you felt some type of way and told your friends that. That's why I played the music louder. And I think that goes to the point, Hanif's point. That was my rage. And that's always been my rage as a performer. It's like, look, you don't understand this and you're not going to take the time. Why should I dilute or turn down my culture that I love and could go anywhere else? Or I'm sorry, I could go back to where it's okay to do that, but I'm choosing to come here and share that with you because you're going to take it. You're going to take it. I'm trying to show you what it really is. And people should not be afraid of our blackness, straight up, culturally speaking. When we are out, if I'm in my crib and I'm playing, which I usually do, I'm playing like J. Cole or Dead Prez or Pac or whatever, or Issues, whatever. I'm playing whatever I want. And I play it in a way that makes me feel good. And if I was still back at home, no one would look any other way. They'd be like, oh yeah, he's bumping the shit, it's Sunday, it's all good, whatever. But when I have a relationship with my presentation of blackness and it offends you and you don't want to have the conversation, but you want to share the space with me and you want to benefit from the peanut butter that we made to the gas mask to save lives to the music that you're going to listen to quietly in your house. You're going to listen to the same music, just turn it down a little bit because culturally, you know, whatever. I believe that we have to understand all of our duty and responsibility to have the conversation. And please don't sideline it. And please don't cover it up with that bullshit. Well, I come from here and this, that. Yes, I understand that. I understand where you come from. I understand that racism is prevalent where you may come from, but you need to accept what you've done. You need to accept what you've done that has really, really put a halt on progress and stop masquerading as a motherfucking progressive. That's what I'm so tired of. And I think that's the biggest point I'm going to make specifically involving this scene, is I'm so tired of everybody calling themselves progressive and alternative, but really just fucking halting the progression. Really, really being degenerative and problematic in your actions or in your silence, your lack thereof, is just as fucking, it's just as painful and degenerative as negative ones to me at this point. So we have to come to terms as a scene, you know what I'm saying? We have to come to terms with we are not ultimately progressive by any stretch. We are not, you know what I'm saying? The fact that we have in this conversation after thousands of lives have been lost just from 2018 to now. We did this live stream and I was so painfully inundated with the amount of names that I had to put on this screen from black people that were unarmed black people that were shot and killed in the streets with no consequence on their assailants and murderers. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was inundated with this feeling of, oh my gosh, the value of the black body is so stripped and it's so misunderstood. So we are here today in this conversation to talk about this, but we must first have the hard questions, have the hard conversations, hit them right there. We are not as progressive as we claim to be. And if we continue to be the charlatans, to be the progressive charlatans, if we continue that, then we are just, again, we are just silencing the problem that got us here in the fucking first place. We have to be open to really, really take a mirror and confront ourselves with this thing. And again, symbiotic, you know what I'm saying? Holistic. Everyone on this call, no matter what you are, no matter what you identify as, if you are on this call, you are, this is a digital contract today. And now I know you heard my ass. Now I know it. I can't, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe, comment, maybe. You on this motherfucking call right now. I know you hear me because I'm loud as hell. Okay, so this is a contract. And if I see you out there on that bullshit, mm-hmm. I'm gonna call you out. It's a contract. I know you heard this. So that's what I think about the symbiotic thing. And I appreciate you, Courtney. I appreciate you, honey, on a whole other level than my peers that may be putting together the shows, mixing the shows, playing the shows, but on a whole other level. So thank y'all so much.
Thank you.
Also, can I jump in on that too? Because like in the same token, I didn't realize I didn't say this. I started a lot of my time in the scene as a show photographer too. And I noticed a lot of the same things that Courtney and Hini, if I'm sure you've seen, like obviously you're, you know, the one chocolate chip and a lot of cookie dough to make a joke yeah. out of it. But like, and in the same token as you, it's like, I remember stepping away from that process, but like to Jason's point of like, we signed a social contract when we started fucking with this, like it's a social contract. It has to work that way. And before we dive into the whole concept of how do we critique allyship while still having cancel culture, all this other stuff going on with it, just like knowing that like we are all imperfect and eventually you're probably going to fuck up. Like I will fuck up. My allies will fuck up. The people that are fucked up are going to fuck up. My sister that I agree with because they actually fucked up and said that. But like knowing that the onus is there has to be empathy inside the social contract. It's like, I need you to check my shit the same way that I'm going to check your shit. And we both need to understand that we're doing it to better both of us, which will therefore better the next group and the next group and the next group until everyone ideally is having that empathy, which comes from mindfulness. Like that's something that I think we also have a huge opportunity within the scene is being mindful. Like somebody did something really messed up. Cool. Have the rage, take the moment, think about the question after that, have the thought after that thought, then go do something. So many people just want to be passionately emotional in a direction. And it's like, that's not, it's almost as detrimental as not as doing the wrong thing or not doing something as having that passion go in an unhelpful direction where it starts to really hurt more than it helps. So really we may need to go through the things of like, you have to dissect your social contract with your peers so that you all understand what you agree is the social contract. That's something that we're doing right now is we're unpacking what a social contract is to be a black person in the scene so we can continue to do this and check ourselves with the entire scene as we move forward.
Yeah, if I can add something to that, I think, so like complacency is obviously like, I don't think the scene's been overtly and outwardly racist as far from my memory, but like I feel like complacency and silence is the reason it took so long for us to like even have this conversation in this call. I think complacency and silence is a really easy way for people to not call themselves out. Like there's a really so the pie graph between people like white people who don't use their privilege and like aren't aware of their privilege and like an Amy Cooper is like a full circle. And I think the biggest difference, and for those who don't know, Amy Cooper was that lady who was like freaking out at that bird watcher in Central Park or whatever. I don't know. But it was crazy because that video, in my opinion, that showed how quickly someone who calls himself a progressive and someone who says they're empathetic, who someone who said may even post the black square on Instagram, how quickly they can and how easily they can weaponize their whiteness in a situation where it's advantageous to them. Mm. And as much as I want to believe everybody on this call is not capable of that, we're all capable of that. And not that all lives matter or anything, but like, this is about like any system of oppression ever. So me as a man, I've caught myself weaponizing my masculinity in situations where, like, you know, someone's called me out on it and I got kind of an ass whooping, you know, verbally or whatever. And I totally deserved it. You know, situations like that. If I look back at that and go like, no, I don't have to listen, you know, like that's like, I'm a dude or whatever. And I can back into, you know, all my dude friends agree with me. Like, you know, that kind of stuff. Like that is complacency. And that's the problem. And I think this energy we have for Black Lives right now is exactly what it is. It's energy. Like, energy moves. And we need to keep the energy if we expect anything to actually change, not just have like a Zoom call every couple years when another famous incident of police brutality happens or whatever. You know, like, if we want this stuff to actually change and actually end, we need to keep the same energy for Black Lives, and we need to keep the same energy for all of the disenfranchised groups, especially in this scene, because this scene has a responsibility to those people, in my opinion.
Nah, I agree 100% with that. It was beautiful.
Actually segues into my last question of what next, like, for our allies who are like listening to us talk about this, like, what's the next thing for them to do? Like, and I think you all just actually said it beautifully of like, yo, you're gonna fuck up. It's gonna be shitty and it's okay. We all fuck up. Let's just recollect, move on. But yeah, if you guys have anything else to add on to the what's next portion.
There was something. I'm sorry. No, go, Jordan. Go, Jordan. Oh, welcome back.
So yeah, my camera shut off temporarily. So for me, one of the biggest, like, most frustrating things growing up, and I still see it every now and then, but not as much anymore, which is great. And so I hope it continues to progress this way. But like, I was first drawn to, you know, punk through skateboarding. I was skateboarding with my friends, and we're listening to punk music. And whenever I would feel accepted into another community, it was always like that I was, oh, you're not that black. You're like us. You're not that black. And just this feeling that, like, in order to be accepted, I had to not be black to them anymore. And like I said, it's not as much anymore that I'm seeing that, but I still see it every now and then. And I feel like allies, it's okay to see us as being black. I'm super proud of being black. And like Jason said, I do feel like a superhero. But I have all these white people, like, and I feel like they think that they're, you know, being inclusive to me, but they're not. They're like, I'm proud to be black. It's okay that I'm black and punk. But I'm black and I'm punk. You know, I'm not white and punk. I'm not punk. I'm black and punk. And so just remember, like, it's okay to see your friends in the scene as being black. It's okay, because we are, and we're proud.
Beautiful. I think that on that point, actually, that's a beautiful way to kind of move into this before we leave, is understanding your identity. Do you know what I'm saying? Being proud of your identity first and foremost. I think that we can be, it does get overwhelming, right? Unpacking this, as Aaron said, and trying to figure out the complexity and the layers and the levels to something that has been going on for generations. I mean, for fucking really at the root of it, like, millennia. Like, I mean, like, this is an idea of power. If we're going to talk about punk rock, true punk rock, anarchistic, fucking crusty, I'm talking about fucking anarchy, equality. I'm talking about fucking the circle letters. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. I'm talking about the letters in the circles, okay? If we're going to talk about this on a very, very, like, a fundamental level, it's about power. Understand this. So when we were talking about, what Joan was saying, being proud to be black, you should be proud to be who you are. I think that we've conflated integration with inclusiveness, and we don't have to do that. You can have your black parties. You can have your black culture. You can have your black, you can do that. And you can be tolerant, understanding, and empathetic all at once. You don't have to eradicate and diminish your culture to assimilate into another one that just wants to take from you anyway. They've got us fucked up. They've got us fucked up thinking we have to do that. And that whole, you were actually one of my best friends whose family like took me in and like got me right was a white person. He's on this. He texted me earlier. He's on this. His name is Alex Haythorne. He really showed me that he saw me for me. He was the one person that never made the token black jokes. You know what I'm saying? He never told me I wasn't black. He let me be black as a white person. Okay, so I think Jordan's point is really important. I think it's really important to understand that we should feel comfortable being black and that our white allies should allow us to be black. Do not take that from us, because the idea of whiteness and power has taken everything else from us. Let us be black in this scene. Let us celebrate the way we celebrate. So I think that the idea of integration and inclusiveness, that, you know, they don't need to be latticed. They can run parallel, and that's okay. As long as we remain empathetic, as long as we remain, you know, compassionate, that to me is punk. You know what I'm saying? Allowing these things to live in a space together inside the space, but they don't need to, they don't need to necessarily braid themselves so that one is less than the other. They can run alongside. And lastly, as far as like what can happen is please understand that, you know, what it means at the end of the day to designate power. Okay. I think that we must understand this as points on the board where we're finding ourselves asking for help in a way, whether we say it or not, whether I'm saying, please, like, yo, the people in power in the scene, please help me. Like, whether or not I reached out to Emo Night or not, whether I did it, they hit me up. Okay. Actually, it's not whether or not. I want to say this. They hit me up. Okay. They took what we just discussed as something that they feel they may be duty bound to the scene to do, to make it more understanding, more compassionate. And at the end of the day, that's how we all gonna thrive. People are so worried about holding on. It's so American in this way to believe that you have to look out for number one. Always, always. I'm not saying, look, get your bag, like get it how you live. Like, I'm not mad at you. I think we need to do that. We have to. We're living in a society that's structured that way, whether we like it or not. But I do believe that we're so, so, so confused in a way that we feel that we have to just take for us. We forget that there's someone next to us. We eating. The crumbs is falling and we take the crumbs. We taking the crumbs. We ain't even letting them have the crumbs. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's because we've been tricked into believing that in order to sustain in this country, that we have to look out for us and only, as in me personally, individual. We don't even think about what it looks like to help another black person, another trans person, another gay, another, you know what I'm saying? It's not commonplace anymore in America. And I think that we must understand on an American level, first and foremost, that's where I'm at right now, right? And I think that it extends to the bigger picture. We must understand what it means to look out for someone other than ourselves. And that's okay if that person looks like you in that time, especially when they are disenfranchised, marginalized, then understanding why they are disaffected. Understand this. It's not a threat to your whiteness. It's not a threat to your pocketbook. It is just not even advantageous. We're looking for equity. Black people are looking for equity. We just want to be able to see over that fence that you are that you were born tall enough to look over. We just need a couple boxes. We, you know, the equality thing, that also can get a little misconstrued. I'm looking for equity in everything, in my assets, in my scene, in my art. I'm looking for equity. So don't be afraid. Like, don't be afraid to talk about who you are, to accept your own identity, and don't be afraid to share it. This scene has taught us to be afraid to share who we are. It made us straighten our hair all the time. It made us be afraid to take someone back to our crib to eat our food. It made us afraid to show up listening to our music. We had to put on the goddamn absolutepunk.net hot pick or whatever the fuck. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we had to go and do that to show up to the show, even though we left bumping Pac. We left bumping Miles Davis. We left, you know what I'm saying? We left bumping Gil Scott. Like, we left doing that. You can show up doing that same thing. You can show up being that same person and still enjoy this music, and you should. So we can share on all levels our culture, our wealth, and we can find equity through that. But as far as the allies are concerned, understand that statistically speaking, we are still and we have been at a disadvantage. It's going to take a lot of work. If you really on this call, if you really posting that shit on your Instagram and you ain't just doing it for a like, you ain't just doing it for a trend. If you really on that shit, then it goes beyond this call. It goes beyond this call. And that social contract, like we said, not only am I going to call you out on it, but I'm going to expect it. And when I expect something, I'm willing to have the conversation and not cancel you. Aaron, thank you for bringing up cancel culture. I can't believe I didn't say this. I've been writing so many songs for this new Fever shit, my solo shit, about this. That whole cancel culture, I believe that's a fucking conspiracy. That's just killing motherfuckers without actually having the conversation. Again, it's just moving people out to make more space for somebody to make money again. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's all here. You got to look at where it's coming from and you got to look at what happens. Like, this is not the way that we flourish. It is not the way we flourish because, again, Dr. Martin Luther King, who's I subscribe to a lot of things that he did a lot, you know what I'm saying? Read, I might not get there with you. That's all I'm going to say about it. Like, there are things that we do that humanize us, that make us real, that make us people, and fucking up is one of them. Fucking up is one of them. So, we need to be able to have this conversation. And this scene is so guilty of it. And then you go and you place yourself in a position where, yeah, I called that person out. Yeah, I ruined that person's career. Why are you proud of that? Why didn't you help that person? Why didn't you teach people why it was wrong? You're out here just talking on the forums and talking shit and destroying people's lives and then fueling hate and pushing it and pushing it and telling people to destroy. But you ain't destroying the right things. You ain't out there really dismantling anything other than some nigga's music career and his life individually. Why don't you talk about this system? Y'all so ready to go on and talk about Brand New. Y'all motherfuckers so ready to go on and talk about someone who said the wrong thing the wrong way, but you ain't ready to teach. You ain't ready to talk about why that was wrong, and you ain't ready to talk about where that came from. And it's y'all. That's where it came from. It's a bunch of motherfuckers that just canceled or didn't talk about it in the first place. Let's keep it a buck right now. That's what it is. And that's what this scene has been. And I'm sorry I get so, but I've just been thinking about this for so long. And I just think that this is a form that's allowing for it. So we have to do better. All of us. All of us got to do. From me to my black people right now, we got to do better. If you white, don't say that shit. You don't got the same relationship with the struggle. Don't say to a black person, you got to do better. You got to don't tell us what to do. But I'm saying this, we got to do better and we can do better. That's what we are. We are better. We are good. We are great. To our allies, y'all got to do better. I can say that. That's just the relationship. That's the relationship. That is a relationship with my relationship with power and my lack thereof allows me to, again, like you said, Scott, you know, punching down. That's what this is. Okay. So we must do better. And if specifically, particularly unique to this scene, have a fucking conversation before you make a comment. Call me. You got a problem? Call me. Stop putting it on the internet. You don't know what the fuck I was going through at that time, and you don't know why I said what I said. You don't know why these people did what they did. Call that person. Have the discussion. Stop just saying canceled, because you know you listen to those bands anyway. You know you're still bumping them motherfucking albums. Stop playing with me. You are not real in that shit. Stop playing with me. So have the conversations and let's figure out why this is happening. I'm done. I love y'all. Thank you so much.
Nah, I got to run off. I got to take that as well. Cause with the idea of like, with the cancel culture and with the whole, like being afraid of making the wrong move. Last I checked, I got into this community because when I was a teenager, I wasn't particularly sad. I wasn't particularly angry. I just knew that I felt emotions very strongly. I was in touch with the fact that I had a lot of emotions going on. And the music was able to allow me to process that emotion in a vulnerable space, be it in my head or amongst my peers. Mm. And we've lost a lot of that, especially in the punk scene and a lot of the alternative scene. Being vulnerable, which is kind of like you said, Jason, the very American thing, is seen as weakness. Mm. Like being vulnerable has never been a sign of being weak. You can be weak-minded or weak-willed, but being vulnerable is never weak because I'm vulnerable by having this dialogue and talking about parts of my larger story, which is part tragedy, part comedy, part whatever, of how I got to this place. But like, in top of the whole thing of cancel culture and the mindfulness, the vulnerability for all sides has to be involved. It's like you said, call me up, don't call me out. Call me and find the context and check on what's happening. And then if you need to check in on me, say, hey, I'm going to call you back in a day or two. Is that cool? If you're my ally, I expect you to call me like that. If you're one of my homies, I expect you to call me like that. If you're a black person that has my number, I've had the same number since I was 12 years old. It still works. You can call me. I will always pick up the phone if I have your number saved. But like, we got to go back to being vulnerable with ourselves and with each other and being willing to be vulnerable in that process of failure, because that's how you can have the empathy. It's not a, oh, I just fucked up and I don't care I fucked up. It's like, nah, I feel like shit that I fucked up and I deserve to be called out. And I want you to hold me to that standard because I know that you would ask the same of me. Like that golden rule shit has to apply in everybody's facets. Like if I'm going to call you out, maybe not the allies can do that, but like for us, like the black people in the community, in the scene, we have that in the contract. I'm going to call you out. You're going to call me out. You're going to better me. I'm going to better you. I'm going to stand on your shoulder to get somewhere. And I'm going to hold my hand out so you can climb up on mine to keep going where we need to go. But like my big thing is just for next and going forward, be willing, have your agency, have your leverage, use the fact that you can be vulnerable to better your people around you, and then go do, and then you can go do what you need to do and make those leaps and bounds that we want to see in the scene as the people of the scene.
If I may add, this will be quick. I know we're talking a lot, but I think so. I'm a big fan of Jane Elliott, who Twitter just recently discovered. She is adamant about 99.9% of white people being racist. And that's not like because you're a bad person or because you're an asshole or because you shout the N-word at protesters or anything. That's just because you're a product of your own environment and your environment is racist. Mm. I just found out yesterday maps are racist. Literally everything is racist. I think once you realize that, it becomes way harder to cancel somebody, because basically all you're doing is removing this person from their platform and replacing them with someone else who literally just didn't get caught. Mm. So it's like, how does that fix anything if you're not willing to look at the actual problem? And I think the reason cancel culture is so convenient is because so say someone who wants to be an ally calls someone out on Instagram or whatever, like you said this or you did this or whatever. It allows them to in public kind of facilitate this image of like, that's their thing. I don't do that, but that's their thing. So they don't have to call themselves out. But like someone very famous once said, with he without sin cast the first stone. I think we are all, nobody here is sinless. Especially, I guess, speaking to racism, and I'm talking to my allies. So I think like specifically the culture of like canceling somebody without having a conversation. Obviously, if someone needs to be canceled, that's one thing. But like due process, like talk about it, like call that person. Like I just think it should go a lot deeper than like flash in the pan internet outrage, because I don't think that. If basically that's how we operate, I don't think in 10 years anything will be different. I think canceling thing, people will just get bored of it, people move on, and then it'll just be the same shit.
I'm going to say a couple things real quick and then hope to hear from Courtney to close it out on what she thinks is next. I will say I don't know how much time I invest personally in cancel culture. Countless beloved men have committed millennia of literal war crimes and are still, we still have a lot of love for presidents who have committed war crimes. And so I don't think canceling really works. The cancel culture, I'm not dismissing everything that everyone said, but I think there's oftentimes a lot of hysteria around cancel culture, and the actual consequences of it are minimal for the specifically men who are called out on things. And I do think that interpersonal accountability is a different thing, which is useful. But I think what I hope is next is quite simply that people who have power open up space for the black folks they know or they want to be affiliated with, and do it in a way that allows them to not just show up when there is a quote unquote black issue happening, and allows them to show up as their full selves all year round, and not just do it in February, or not just do it when there's an instance of police brutality, or not just do it when there's an election. so many of the Black creatives I know feel stifled by the timeline they're asked to exist in and the restricted interest they're asked to exist in. And I hope that goes away. I hope white folks who have power think about bringing some Black folks into the fold. I hope those Black folks who come into the fold understand that they come with their own set of privileges and that they are in undoubtedly in some cases required to make space for other folks. And so with that, in the spirit of that, Courtney, I hope you'll tell us what you think is next and be the last person to close us out.
Thank you. I believe the next thing for everyone to do is just to fucking have grace. Like, there's no grace within our culture, within society. It's either you are right or you're wrong, and there's no room for growth. I feel like with this moment moving forward, it's just, we're all doing this together. Like, I know that Black folks have been doing this since the beginning of time, but I feel like this whole new era of everything, it's our time / turn to really just be patient with our new allies who didn't realize they're fucking up before. Just kind of walk with them and go, hey, I won't be here forever to help you do this, but let me get you reinstated in what's happening. And here's why this offended me, or what this means, or whatever. Like, I feel like there needs to be more wiggle room for the space to fuck up and the space to grow from it and not hold that over someone's head, because I personally don't grow if someone like holds a thing over my head. Like, remember 5 years ago, you did this one thing? No, you're holding a grudge over my head. I don't want to grow now because you're going to hold that one thing I did when I was 12 over me as if I haven't changed from like that space to now. So I think the next thing is, allies, let your Black friends be your Black friends. Like, don't call them your Black friend. Just let them be your friend, but also let them live unapologetically Black. Like, let them make their art however way that art looks, because we're not just our rage. We're not just the anger you see pouring out over the media over the most recent protests and uprisings. We are so much more than this one thing the media is doing for us. And, honor that and respect it and don't ask for more of it. Just let them have their multifaceted opinions and feelings and emotions, because we have so many of them. And it's not just the rage you see or the anger you see or any of that. And to my Black friends, keep taking up space. Like, so many of us probably came into the scene, want to stand in a corner, don't want to take up too much space because you're a visitor. It's just as much ours as it is theirs, and take up all the space. Yell about shit. Don't change who you are to fit into this mold that even our white friends don't fit. Like, it's this outdated model that we're all trying to chase, and it's just fucking burn it down, start a new one. And like, let's all do this together and be really mindful of where we're all coming from, because I can look at someone and assume that, hey, you have it going good because your parents did X, Y, Z, without realizing that person probably has their own trauma they're working through. So it's just really meeting your friends where they're at and extending grace. And that's just where I think the next thing is, like, really not letting this conversation end once the Zoom call ends, or once Black Lives Matter is no longer in the media. It's, our lives are going to always matter. We're going to always be in the scene. Love us when there is no more hashtags to come out. Like, love us when there is a new hashtag coming out, because there will be another death, because the government is the government. Love us and all that. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for doing this. Also, thank you Babs and TJ and Morgan and Ricky for having us. It's an honor to like be loud on the internet and also loud on a Zoom call. So thanks for that. Thanks for giving us the space to do that.
Also, I want to get all your numbers at some point, because I want to check on you guys. I want to keep checking in with you after we have this conversation. Make sure you're all doing all right where you are.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah, definitely, sure. Definitely.
Yeah, mine is 555.
867-5309.
I'm with you all. 201-330-8004.
Can't stand it. I gotta go. My mom's calling me. I gotta
Mommy,
go.
Mommy, I'm scared.
Mommy, they're yelling. I gotta go.
Bonjour. This is Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. I'm Andrew Pryor, and every week I bring you the wonderful and fabulous people involved in French food, whether they're here in France like me or from around the world. Each week, we dive into a specific topic, be it a French dish, an ingredient, or a French cuisine cooking technique. My guests are all about French food. So come join me on Fabulously Delicious, the French Food Podcast. Bon app.